Started here, Mishlei Chaf Ches 28, chapter 28. Thanks for sticking it out. We are almost there. You know, only a few chapters left, and Mirz Hashem next year we'll have a special opportunity to go through Eishes Chayil in a different way than we have been doing until now. Not too different, but a little more in depth. But for now, we are in chapter 28. Some really fascinating psukim tonight, as usual from Shlomo HaMelech, or at least from compiled comments of Shlomo HaMelech, as we've seen from the last few chapters. We are up to 28:11. Chacham be'enav ish ashir. Whenever you see the word be'enav, your alarms should go off. What does it mean, be'enav? Chacham be'enav ish ashir. A wealthy person is wise in his own eyes. Right? If he was actually wise, it wouldn't say in his own eyes. It would have said, Chacham ish ashir. Right? And sometimes we mistakenly think, I think we talked about this last time, we mistakenly think that, oh, they're wealthy, they must be brilliant. They must be the most wise, and, you know, you can go to them for counsel. As Tevye says, you know, if I were a rich man, people would ask me all kinds of questions, and it wouldn't matter if I'm right or wrong. When you're rich, they think you really know. That's true. For some reason, we equate wealth with knowledge, with wisdom, and oftentimes, and it's true, sometimes you do require a certain amount of wisdom if you want to make money in that specific area that you're making money, first of all. But secondly, a lot of times, it's just, you know, circumstance, person, place, you know, the right time, the right place, and it just happens sometimes. People make money. And then for whatever reason, probably more of a reflection of ourselves than it is of that person, we attribute to them. Some people call this the, or at least this might be one manifestation of what Daniel Kahneman calls the halo effect. We think one good thing about a person, and therefore, in order to sort of make things all fit nicely together in a nice box in our mind, we assume everything else about them is positive. We have one good impression about a person, and therefore, oh, they must be a good spouse. They must be a good money manager. They must be a good friend. They must be a good whatever, right? And you find this a lot, unfortunately, in sort of celebrity. That's the most stark contrast between what people mistakenly think and what the people actually are. Because people, oh, I like this guy in a movie. And therefore, I also like the way he dresses. And I like the fact that he drives a Lincoln, right? The Lincoln lawyer, right? And I like the fact that he drinks Gatorade. I mean, this is the basis of all advertising, that you get a celebrity to do it because if I like them in one area, I must be, you know, also a fan of them in another area, when logically it makes absolutely no sense. In fact, I would say it makes even less sense by actors and actresses who are literally paid to pretend. That's their job. Their job is to be fake people. And we believe that not only are they, you know, not fake, but they're good in other areas, right? So if somebody plays the sympathetic, the sympathetic father role in some kind of movie, so therefore they must be actually a good father. And they must actually be a good person. And then, you don't have to look very far until you find another news article about this guy or that guy, or this woman or that woman, you know, doing something very nefarious, very unbecoming, things that we wouldn't want our children to see or to hear about. And yet, we still have this positive notion of all celebrities. We give them this strange benefit of the doubt. That's not to say that sports players and celebrities can't be good people. Of course they can be, relatively, you know. But to the extent that they are a celebrity or they are a sports player, that has no bearing on what kind of person they are. There is no connection there. And in a similar sense, even if they're not necessarily in the spotlights, but they have a lot of money, especially today in the Jewish community, unfortunately, we give them a sense of credence, of unwarranted moral credence. You know, there's none. Now, it could very well be that they're good people. But just because they have money doesn't make it so. And I think that's what you find here, that sometimes that's the way that we treat them with that level of, we prop them up to that status. So then they get it in their own mind that they must be very smart. Now, it's not only because people tell them that, but it's also because no one would dare correct them, right? So how many times you find someone who's successful is never corrected. They're surrounded by yes men. They're surrounded by people that will just confirm everything that they say for fear or for, you know, trying to curry favor or whatever. You hear sometimes, you know, people say that they don't have, you know, the wealthy people say they don't have any real friends. Because when you're wealthy, everybody wants to be your friend. And it's not real, friendship. It's just, you know, everyone wants a piece of the pie type of friendship. So chacham be'enav ish ashir. A wealthy person is wise in their own eyes. Not necessarily wise in anyone else's eyes, but wise in their own eyes. And then the last part of the pasuk is sort of even more interesting, you know, in terms of how to interpret it given the first part. V'dal mevin yachkarenu. Dal typically refers to a poor person. And let's assume for the moment that we're not going to disprove the wealth or the lack thereof in these two people, because the pasuk sounds like it's a matter of fact. The ish ashir is actually wealthy, and the dal is actually poor. And yet when it comes to chacham, the chacham of the ish ashir, it's only be'enav. But by the dal, by the poor person, he's a meivin. It's not meivin be'enav. It's not that he believes or he understands in his own mind. He is an understanding person. So it's unclear what to make of that. I don't want to get into the weeds of sort of the methodology here, but I think it can go multiple ways. But suffice it to say, v'dal mevin yach karenu is the word that I really want to focus on. Yach karenu is, I'm trying to literally translate it. Dal mevin, an understanding poor person, yach karenu. Literally, that means he will analyze him. He will analyze him. I think that's what that means. In the Art Scroll, it translates it, can search out more. Yach karenu, it's an interesting read. I think what they're trying to say is, we'll be more analyzing. We'll be more investigative than the wise man. The wise man sees something and assumes, because of his own sort of self-attributed wisdom, will assume he knows what's going on. But the poor person, who doesn't have that same level of automatic credence, either from others or in his own eyes, so then he will look into it more. When you have a certain level of humility, that could come from any, you know, any type of humility. A person could become humbled because he doesn't have money, but he could also become humbled because he was raised that way. He could become humbled because of where he lives, or, you know, what his lifestyle is, or, you know, his values, whatever it might be. But the person who is more humble, I think that's what it's talking about, Dal Mevin, an understanding poor person, will look into things more. What's more interesting, more than the rich person. I get right if you put them against each other. What's more interesting is how some of the Mefarshim explain, not that they're sort of contrasted, not that we've got the wealthy person here, the poor person here. If we put them into, if we gave them both, you know, a half hour in an escape room, so then the poor person would do better. That's not just what we're saying, that he's more investigative than that. That's not only what we're saying. But also, yach karenu could mean, as I literally translated it before, will investigate him more. What does that mean, investigate him more? So the Ralbag explains that this is referring to what is their relationship like? The poor person and the wealthy person, when they get to know each other. So he says like this, Ha'ish ha'ashir hu chacham bi'einav b'mnei ro'oso ha'tzlachas d'rachav. The wealthy person is, as we said before, he thinks he's brilliant because look how successful he's been, you know, in his money endeavors. V'dal mevin yachkren mitzad chachmaso v'yisavev sheyotzi ha'ashir b'piv ma sheyispa'er mumo v'chesron midaso. The dal mevin, the poor person who's just seeking to understand, I don't know if people ever tried this, unfortunately it happens so much, that people, either because of their own assumptions or because of what other people tell them about how right they always are, they'll just believe something without actually looking deeply into it. And then someone else who doesn't have that, again, that same level of automatic credence or that same level of hubris to just assume that they know everything, the other person will just start asking questions. Not, you know, claiming that they're wrong, not saying that, they're just inquiring. I give this as a piece of advice to a lot of people who have difficulty in sort of someone in their life that's not listening or something. So ask honest and authentic, sincere questions. A person believes that the world is flat. Oh, the world is flat? I never knew that. What does the world look like? Just explain it to me. Okay, it looks like it has, you know, glaciers on the outskirts of the... Okay, so what's under the world? And like, just simple questions. And as they continue to talk, what they'll realize is they don't really know what they're talking about. And they don't actually know just the basics of what they're talking about. I'm not talking just about flat earth. That's kind of an easy one. But anything in life, anything in life. Just keep asking questions and honest questions just to try to understand what they're talking about. I was listening today, you know, I've confessed to the my tendencies on, you know, online with documentaries or with you know, Judge Judy or true crime podcasts or whatever. So another one of my things that I just happened upon recently is Tuvia Singer videos. Anyone know Rabbi Tuvia Singer? Gotta know Rabbi Tuvia Singer. You don't know Rabbi Tuvia Singer? He's a famous, I don't even know what his job title is. He basically makes it his life's mission to object and disprove missionaries. He's like famous for like going against, you know, Jews for Judaism and Messianic Jews. They change their name every 5 years when people find them out. But his whole thing is like, explain to me what you mean. He was explaining this recently in a podcast I was listening to. He said, people don't understand, like, my method is not... And he's a very soft-spoken guy. I don't know if anyone has ever heard him. You've probably seen him. I mean, he's famous. Batya Schreiber is a big fan. And Tova Schreiber. But he's just, like, very soft-spoken. And he said that his tactic is, explain to me your best argument. He doesn't come to them and say, how could you say this, that, and the other thing? He doesn't, like, attack them and interrogate them and tell them that, you know, this is how you read this and this is how you read that. He says his main tactic is, just explain to me what you mean. Just tell me what you mean. And through just innocent, you know, not such invasive but prodding questions, it comes to a point where, like, they don't even know what they're talking about. And he just says, do you know that, have you ever heard, you know, oftentimes he'll say things like, have you ever seen the Hebrew version of that verse? Because I will tell you that the Hebrew doesn't say anything like you think it means in the King James version, whatever. Anyways, so my point is that sometimes you put up these people, someone who assumes that they know everything, and the person who is just a Dal Mevin, he's a simple, poor, you know, figuratively poor Mevin. He's trying to understand. And Yach Karenu, he will just ask and investigate. Yach Karenu, meaning he will investigate him. He will start to ask the Chacham Be'enav, the Ashir. He'll ask the wealthy person, hey, could you explain it to me a little bit? Not in like a gotcha way, but in like a sincere way. Like, I want to understand what you're trying to say. So, and that's what the Rabbag is saying. V'yisavev sheyotzi ha'asher b'piv. And what he's going to cause is that the wealthy person will send out of his mouth, sheyotzi ha'asher b'piv, ma sheyitba'er mumo v'chisron midato. Ultimately, he's going to expose his blemishes and his deficient characteristics. Kamo ha'inyan b'chakiras ha'edim, just like with a witness. Chakira means to investigate the witness. Shulam or Amasha b'divreiyam shem me'amumim va'aziz bar la'asher ki lo yuchal lishamer me'anos al hadal. And then what's going to happen is the wealthy person will realize he's not able to understand or to answer all of the questions of the understanding poor person. Mashiz bar bo mum sichlo ubeze gam kein hara lahai shir hayodim lalamit chachmasam lezulosam. Okay. Yeah, and he talks about also that zeha ish ha'ashir b'de'ot yikra lo limhirut sichlo la'amor al dvarim b'kalut. He comes to these ideas very quickly and very easily. That's another pitfall of the... Daniel Kahneman talks about this. He talks about the fallacy, I don't know what he calls it, the ease... the ease of understanding fallacy. Basically, the easier something comes to us, we assume because it's easier to understand, that means it must be right. Right? And this is basically like any non-nuanced political or cultural conversation. Oh, that must be that. Oh, that must be racism. You know? Oh, that must be, you know, and that works also the other way. You know, oh, that must be anti-Semitism. I was listening also today to Rabbi David Wolpe. I don't know if people know him. He's a conservative rabbi on the West Coast. And he was interviewed for a podcast a couple months ago that I had on my queue and I never listened to. So I listened to a little today. And he said, and this is going to sound a little shocking, but he said, and it's probably true, he said, Claudine Gay is not anti-Semitic. You know Claudine Gay is?
She's from Harvard.
The Harvard dean or whatever, president, who I think she was demoted or something, I don't know. Either way, he says she's not anti-Semitic. She said something which is against Jews, but she doesn't like hate Jews. Right? But we are so quick to sort of just say, oh, that's going against the Jews. That means she is necessarily anti-Semitic. Just like someone would just, you know, that's something that would negatively affect black people. They must be racist. What does racism mean if any possible negative consequence to somebody else means that you must be against the whole race of people because of the color of their skin? That means nothing's racism. Right, so we have to be very careful with our words, but I think that's what the Ralbag is saying, this phrase, that the ish ha'ashir b'deot yikr lo limhirut sikhlo la'amod al hadvarim b'kalut. He gets to his conclusions very quickly and with ease. There is a fallacy of ease. I don't know what Kahneman calls it, but the easier something comes to our mind, sort of like the, you know, how quickly we can categorize it. Oh, that's that. Right? The ease in which we can make that quick conclusion is itself a misleading, misguided reason we believe that it's correct. Because of how quickly we thought of it, that must be correct. Whereas it's not true. It happens all the time online. That's the whole point of sort of clickbait titles. You're trying to get a certain, you know, conclusion for people to see it and to assume something. Just because of how quickly they can categorize that thing. It's harder to say without proper examples. But that, says the Ralbag, is what's going on with the Ish HaAshir. He's so wealthy, and he's so believed, and he's so trusted, and he's so put on this pedestal that anything he thinks immediately, he just assumes he's right. And that's the difference between a Dal Mevin. The Dal Mevin will just start asking very innocent questions and investigate his concept. I remember a few years ago, it was during COVID, someone was telling me about the elections and how something about how Trump was manipulating all the election booths and whatnot. And I said, oh, how is he doing that? And the person like literally didn't know how to answer that. Like he just didn't, like he heard it from whatever, MSNBC. And that doesn't mean that I'm a Trump guy. I just wanted to understand what he was trying to say. And it's just that how is he actually preventing people from going to the polls? Because it was something about going, there was like some kind of weather issue, and they were going to the what's it called in New Orleans? The dome where they play football. I don't know, it doesn't matter. So they had some kind of thing that they were voting over there because they couldn't vote elsewhere. And this person thought like that was some kind of, you know, proof that he was manipulating the ballots. I said, like, are the people not, you know, the same people not watching the booths that they were before? Like, what is he doing? And the person just didn't know. He just heard that from somebody, assumed it was correct, has a pre-bias against Donald Trump, and therefore was just like running with it because it made sense to him, because he didn't actually look into it. So that also ties into how you could read this pasuk that ashir and dal don't necessarily mean financial. Ashir and dal also could mean a sort of a richness, a wealth of what they think is knowledge, meaning that the person thinks they've learned a lot. I went to day school. I went to college. I don't have to learn anything else. I've got my job. I've got people that are telling me that I'm right. And therefore, I'm an ashir, right? I'm wealthy in terms of what I have accomplished or what I have or what education I've already had. I don't have to learn anything else. And therefore, if you tell me, you know, about something, I can tell you what it's all about without actually investigating it. any further. As opposed to the Dal Mevin, he might not be necessarily so poor, regardless of financials, but he sees himself as poor. He sees himself as someone who always can learn a lot more. Right? And we've talked about before the Dunning-Kroger effect, Krieger effect? I don't remember. About the more you know about something, the more you realize you don't know about something, as opposed to the one who doesn't know, thinks they really know a lot about something. Either way, and then another beautiful interpretation is from Rashi, a very figurative interpretation, where he says that Ish Ashir Vidal Mevin, the rich person and the poor person will investigate. Kineged Rav Vitalmid, Hu Medaber, says Rashi, this pasuk is talking about a teacher and a student. Shatalmid Choker, the student, a good student, will ask follow-up question. The teacher says something and the student says, I don't understand. Didn't we just say this? I don't understand. How does that fit with that? And that, the al yado, and through the student's questioning, harav mitzchakem, the teacher will become smarter. I think, I don't know who said it. I've heard it a bunch of times, that if you really want to know something, you have to teach it. If you really want to understand something, teach it and then be sort of tested by the fire. Have your students, well, first of all, you have to present it in a way. You know, I've been amazed how many times I've thought I knew what I was going to say, and then I try saying it, and I'm like, that actually doesn't make any sense. And I have to go sort of, you know, re-explain it or step back from it or apologize for it or whatever. You know, we think something, again, sort of like that ease factor. It comes to our brain, we assume that we know what we're talking about, and then when we start to say it to a student, so it doesn't make as much sense as we thought when we're trying to explain it.
I think the classic line, Rabbi, is I learn more from my students than from my teachers.
Yeah, there's a Gemara like that. Mikom lamdai hiskalti, but mi talmidai yotzer mi rabosai, or something like that. Yeah. Yotzer mikulam, something like that. Yeah. That I learn more from my students than from my teachers. And that's what Rashi is saying here, that there's the ish ashir. There's the rich man. The rich man is the teacher. He's the one that's supposed to know everything. She's the one that's supposed to have been to college already. She got the degree, whatever. And then the Dal Mevin, the poor person, the student who doesn't know anything, but is trying to, Yachkerenu. Yachkerenu means they will investigate him, meaning the teacher. They will investigate her, meaning the one who's supposed to know, the rich person who's supposed to know. So a beautiful pasuk, beautiful different ideas we can understand from there. But we got to move on. Yud Beis, another fascinating pasuk. Ba'alot tzadikim rabba tifares. With the, I think this is translated as, the excitement of righteous people, then there will be an abundance of splendor. I don't know how they say that in the art scroll. Yes, yeah, splendor. Uvekum rishaim. And when the wicked rise up, yichupas adam. Yichupas adam is a very difficult phrase to translate. It says in the art scroll, but when the wicked rise, people are investigated. Yichupas, meaning they are investigated passively. The person is investigated. We're going to get to a unbelievable Malbim soon, but first let's see just how the Ralbag says it. The Ralbag says, Uvahatzlachasam, when the righteous people are successful, I guess this could be, and the Malbim says it is, a continuation of the previous pasuk, that the tzaddikim is a reference to the Dal Mevin, who have sort of bested the Chacham Be'enav. Uvahatzlachasam rabba tiferes ba'olam. Splendor will come to the world. Kihem yanhigu ha'adam hanhaga yishara. When the righteous people are successful, they will give over and lead by example the ways in which a person should live. Yishara u'mishubeches, you know, the more praiseworthy, you know, activities. Uvit komes harishaim v'roma musam. However, when the wicked people rise up and are exalted, yarbek halos ba'olam, a certain frivolity will take over the world. And because of their level of understanding, they will try hard to seek out and show. This is a fascinating phrase. Even the good people do what they're doing. Gigam hatovim, even the good people, osim osam, they'll do the same things that they're doing. Kimach shavtam shetia anhagazu osam kanhagasam, because they want their actions, the wicked people want their actions to be perceived as righteous actions. This is a different understanding. This is a really interesting concept. I think the Ralbag is saying that when wicked people take power, people who aren't necessarily doing, aren't of the upstanding character, instead of changing their character, instead of improving and developing, becoming more moral people, instead what they'll say is, look, even the righteous people would do the same thing we're doing. And they will make some kind of, if it's blatant lie, but they will interpret things in order to make it look like they're doing the same thing as them. Trying to find good examples here. There was once I had a rabbinic mentor that once had a whole spiel about a certain dynamic of parents who send their kids to Israel, which I honestly don't believe, but I think there's a kernel of truth that he's coming from. He used to say that, especially in the New York area, parents would send their kids off to yeshiva or to seminary, and while they were doing so in order for them to learn and to grow, etc., what they really wanted was them to learn and to be, to be educated, then come back to America and do exactly what they were doing, which is not learning and not davening and being too involved with their business and being obsessed with big houses and big cars. And the way that he said it was, the parents are looking forward to the day where they could say to their children, see, you're just like us. You always thought when you were in Israel and you saw that we, were obsessed with our cars and we came late to davening, you thought that we were, these bad people. But the truth is, you went to Israel, you were educated, and look where you are now. You're back where we are. You also don't like davening. You also don't like learning. You also are not so religious. So look, you're just like us. Your righteousness was also short-lived. So I think about that, regardless of that. I don't think that's true. I think parents really do want the best for their children. And even if they aren't religious, they sort of, they respect and they praise their kids if they're successful. Maybe it's different. Maybe I don't know those kinds of parents or that kind of culture on the East Coast. But I do think that concept is true. Regardless of whether parents can do it to their children, I do think that people generally who aren't doing the right things, who aren't maybe living up to their own potential, will seek out examples of other people who are assumed to be good doing the same bad thing. Look, they also X, Y, or Z. They also aren't so religious. They also, don't treat people, the same way. They also, skirt their, moral obligations. I don't want to give examples, but the point is that that I think this is also sort of what the Ralbag is saying. Uvakum reshaim yechu pas adam. When a Rasha takes power, when they get to some level of authority, they will yechu pas adam. Every person is going to be searched out, as if to say, look, you're also no good. Look, you're also just as bad as we are. And before you're so quick to judge us as a Russia, look at yourself in the mirror and you're just like us. You're just like us. Anyway, so that's the Ralbag, a difficult concept to come to terms with. But the Malbim has an unbelievable take here. If you look at the Pasuk, and it's actually connected to the next Pasuk and the previous Pasuk, but the Malbim says, the word Adam is the operative word here. He says, Ba'alatz tzadikim, that's the beginning of the pasuk, Ba'alotz tzadikim, the excitement of the righteous. He says, Pa'al alatz, the word alatz, to be excited, Tamid al simcha tanefesh, that always is a reference of the word alatz libi. Anyway, this is another pasuk. Elsewhere. Alatz is always a reference to a spiritual excitement, Simchas hanefesh, the soul is excited. B'inyanim ruchnim, with spiritual things. Hatzadikim ya'altzu livnei Elokim b'simcha ruchanitz ayidei tzidkasam. They are joyous, they're excited about Hashem. U'bezeh rabba tiferes. And that's why there will be an abundance of splendor. Ki tiferes lehem in ha'adam she'oshram hu osher anoshi. They will be giving splendor to Hashem or to themselves through how other people will see them and their spiritual success. Aval, however, says the Malbim, this is really, really incisive, insightful, but also it hits home. Bikum rishaim yichupas adam. Rotz Elomar, says the Malbim, ha'adam ha'atzmi mitchapes u'mishtaneh bilivushav. The Adam ha'atzmi. What's the Adam ha'atzmi? The Adam ha'atzmi is the people we are deep down. The people that we are characteristically that we're supposed to be. Our ideal person. Ha'adam ha'atzmi mitchapes u'mishtaneh bilivushav. That person will be searched out, yichupas adam. When the rasha has success, that person is nowhere to be found. The real person deep down, according to the Malbim, is mitchapes u'mishtaneh bilivushav. He's hiding, and he is clothed within other outward appearances. Ki ha'atzlacha shelahem hu leguf ha'behemi. Because their success is only external. It's to their animal soul. It's to their animal being. They're seeking out luxuries and pleasures and other types of things which are not themselves. That's not who they really are deep down. Sheha Adam mitchapes umitlabesh levush behemi. It reminds me of Yaakov dressing up as Esav. The personhood, the Adam, the real person on the inside, who this person could be, has been dressed up and been covered up with animal clothing. They're acting like an animal. Ki hem yotzim migeder ha'adam, v'hem behema b'tzuras adam. They are really just an animal that looks like a person, but they are not acting like people. As he says earlier on in the piece, afa pishuhu matzliach, ein ze hatzlacha amitit. Even if they're being successful, it's not true success. Ki ha'osher v'tanuge olam hazeh hem rak hatzlachos l'guf ha'behemi. Because this worldly pleasures are only success to the animal sides of ourselves. She'enu ha'adam ha'amiti. It's not the real person deep down. Rak ha'adam ha'mitchapes u'mitlabesh b'tzurat behema. It's the Adam which has to be sought out. We can't find him, right? Mechupas. Yechupas Adam. The person that is needs to be sought out, needs to be found. U'mitlabesh b'tzurat behema. They're being clothed in some kind of animal image. Vidoma kiyasra balechaim, and he's just like every other animal. Shemotziim kol tzarchem b'revach v'leis da'asr mechaziri. And they find all their needs just like an animal, even if they have a lot of things. And they're no better than, I think this means, they're no wealthier than a pig. Mechaziri. V'hatzlacha zu ena tiferes ela el ha'adam ha'amiti. And that's not true tiferes. Tiferes means a person who is able to have true splendor by fulfilling his God-given mission of developing as a person, of being a more upstanding person. An unbelievable interpretation from the Malbim. I was shocked. I was about to move on from this pasuk, and then I saw the Malbim. I'm like, wow, I have to write that down. So you can, whatever. You don't see my notes, but usually I skip a line, and I had already skipped a line and started writing for the next pasuk, and then I put the Malbim in the skipped line because I needed to write it down. It's an unbelievable pasuk. There is a beautiful chabura that Rav Moshe Weinberger gives, and I don't know why his shiurim stopped being posted on YUTOR, but you can still get them online on YouTube, which, I was a little late to that game. But either way, he has the chabura called Ayeka, which is such a beautiful concept. It's based on a sefer called Ayeka, which is not available. I tried to get it. It's only available in Israel. But the sefer is called Ayeka. Anyone know where the word Ayeka is found? Reina Katz would know. It's from Adam and Chava. When after they sinned with the fruit tree, so Hashem says to them Ayeka, as if to say, like, I don't know where you are, but the word Ayeka means where are you? It's so meaningful just thinking about it. Ayeka, the sefer, the book Ayeka, is where are you? Means where is the true you? Ayeka, where are you? Hashem knew where Adam and Chava were. Hashem wasn't saying to Adam, and Rashi says over there, he's just, you know, it's like small talk. Making small, hey, how you doing? Like, he knows where they are, right? He doesn't really need to know where they are. But he asks the question, Ayeka. That's how Rashi explains it. So he says that Ayeka really means, Adam, where's the true Adam? Where's the true Adam and Chava? The person that I put into Gan Eden. Where's the true person that you're supposed to be? Where is that person? You just sinned. The one thing I told you not to do, you went against your better potential, your better character, and you became a different person. Ayeka, where are you? Where are you? Such a beautiful concept for a sefer, and I look forward to one day getting the sefer. But it reminds me a lot of this Malvin that he says, "Uvakum Rasham Yichupas Adam." When a Rasha, you know, gains success, as we said before in the previous pasuk, when a Rasha gains success, so then Yichupas Adam, the Adam inside of him, the true person that he is, you can't find him anymore. He's not there anymore. They're you know, seeking out all the luxuries of life, the pleasures of life. And instead of developing their true inner essence, they have resorted to just being more of like an animal, you know, faith and following their desires. Really unbelievable, Malbim. Yud Gimel, 28:13. Mechaseb Shav Lo Yaseh. We've talked about this so much, but it's now, I think this is the most explicit we've ever seen it. I've interpreted much of many psukim and mishlei like this. But the Malbim says here, Shlomo Malch says here, Mechaseb sha'av lo yatzliach. Mechaseh means to cover. If a person covers up their wrongdoings, they will not be successful. However, umodev ozev, if they confess their wrongdoings and they leave their wrongdoings, then yirucham, they will be forgiven. This is, obviously, we've talked about this, but to the extent that we're willing to be honest and open about our shortcomings, that's the extent to which we'll be successful. Mechaseb shav lo yatzliach, if a person is not willing to come to terms and to admit that they did something wrong, so they will not be successful. They will be chasing, you know, lie after lie after lie, excuse after excuse after excuse. Right, this is the fixed mindset versus the growth mindset. Are you willing to admit when you did something wrong? When you have a wrong opinion, when you've misunderstood something, the quicker you are to admitting that, the quicker you'll be to success. And not just that, but the more willing others will be to forgive you for your wrongdoing. If a person is going to double down and triple down every time more evidence is brought to you that you made the wrong mistake. You know, you did the wrong thing, and instead of, you know, owning up to it, apologizing, saying that, you know, your inner demons got the best of you, whatever it might be, you say, oh, it was because of this. Oh, it was that person's fault. Oh, you know, I was tired that day. So instead of passing the buck, so just come to terms with it. And the more that you make excuses, people will see that. People see it pretty quickly that you're not a forthcoming person. You're not willing to grow. You're not committed to developing and getting things right. So then you're not going to be forgiven by other people. But umodev ozev, if you're willing to confess, you're willing to leave that behind. So then you will be forgiven. Because also it means that you're willing to grow. I would say beyond just, it is interesting, the three words here. Umodev ozev yirucham. First of all, it sounds like it's working, you know, it's building upon the first person. Then mechaseb sha'av lo yatzliach. But if modev ve'ozev yirucham, that's first of all, it's an interesting part. But also umodev ve'ozev. I would say that second vav is not necessary, but I get why it is necessary. You could read it, umodev ozev yirucham, if a person confesses and leaves those ways. And leaves those ways. That they confess, and then they decide they're not going to do it anymore. Meaning, yes, I didn't daven well. And now I'm also going to decide I'm going to daven better. Right? That's the two steps there. I think that it's kind of obvious, but umodev ozev, if you truly confess, so then you will naturally leave the wrongdoing. Meaning, you can't really leave it until you confess it. You can't really leave the wrongdoing unless you're willing to admit that it was a wrongdoing. Like, why would you stop doing the wrong thing unless you've admitted that you did the wrong thing? Sometimes maybe I guess there's a difference in terms of how publicly we admit something. Maybe that's what it's talking about. But umodev ozev yirucham, that in order to actually leave that wrongdoing, you have to be willing to forgive. You have to be willing to admit first and foremost that you did something wrong. Embrace it, and then you can move past it. But before you do that, you're not going to be able to get past it. Okay, Yudal, a famous pasuk here. Famous pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid. Unclear what it's referring to, at least in its pshat. But praiseworthy is the person who is constantly fearful. That's not the most positive 21st century pasuk there. Praiseworthy is the person that's always scared, that's always, you know, in fear. What does that mean? Umak shalibal yupal bara. If somebody is stubborn, they will fall into wickedness. So what does it mean? Ashri adam fachei tamid. Best is, you know, praiseworthy is a person that's constantly fearful. Says Rashi, doeg meonesh. They're worried about sinning. Uvechak meonserachik meavera. And because they're so worried about sinning, they will distance themselves from any kind of sin. Okay, that is certainly a worthwhile approach. It sounds almost like Avoda Meira, which, you know, many a Hasidic opinion would not appreciate. But I think there are other ways of understanding this. Ashri Adam Mefachei Tamid. I've talked about this in other ways, but I think that as opposed to interpreting this as some kind of emotional fear, like someone who's just scared and just not willing to do things, they have this apprehension or whatever, agoraphobia or something like that, I don't think that's what it means. I think what it means is Ashri Adam Mefachei Tamid, a person who lives with a constant reverence for the things around him, a constant reverence for, you know, it's not pachad, like I'm scared, what's going to happen to me, like, ooh, you know, the boogeyman or whatever. But Mefachei Tamid means I don't want to impinge on the honor of someone else or the sanctity of something else or the moment, you know, to honor and to revere. I remember, you know, speaking of sports players, maybe Evan could appreciate this. Maybe, I don't know, who knows, you know, sports in any nuanced way. But from where I sit, one of the more upstanding, you know, sports players that I've witnessed is a guy named Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is like a real salt of the earth kind of guy. You know, he would like, he writes letters to people, like that kind of guy. And he gave his Hall of Fame speech, and I've listened to it multiple times because I just feel like it's very, like, insightful, especially coming from like a football player. You know, you don't always see that every day from a football player. But he in his speech, he talked about this concept that he didn't love the game; he revered the game. Like now it's weird. Like for me, like it's a game, you know, whatever. But if you don't have anything else, I guess he's probably a religious guy, if I had to guess. But to me, it sounds like how one should act towards things that are really important. Like you revere the opportunity. He talked about how he revered the opportunity to play the game in the right way, to play against and to give proper respect to the people that are trying to stop him. Not to say that they're worthless and I'm going to beat you and whatever, but to say like you're a worthy opponent and I revere the opportunity. I'm going to properly respect and honor the opportunity to play against you. It was just a very interesting. You don't hear football players talk like that, but I think about that. You know, vis-a-vis this pasuk lahavdil, you know, and the way that we should look at Torah, the way we should look at davening, the way we should look at putting on tefillin, the way we should look at, you know, lighting Shabbos candles. It's not just, okay, you do this, you do that, whatever, but to revere the opportunity. Like, I have an awesome, like in a literal sense, an awesome opportunity to do mitzvos. And I think that's what it means. That's how I'm going to interpret. Ashri Adam Mefachei Tamid. And, you know, praiseworthy is the person that's constantly revering the opportunities around him, to revere that opportunity, to not take it lightly, to not take it frivolously, to not take it, you know, flippantly, that we get to daven, that we get to put on our tefillin, that we get to learn Torah, right? To revere that opportunity. Mefachei Tamid. I don't want to disrespect that mitzvah. I don't want to, you know, devalue the moment, you know, and let it pass by without properly, you know, honoring it. I spoke a couple Yom Kippurs ago about, I think it was Yom Kippur, about the, what was it? There's a story that I heard from Ephraim Goldberg. That's wonderful stories. But he had said something about Toscanini was the one that was looking at the piano. I think it was Beethoven's piano, maybe. You know, there's a museum and they have Beethoven's own piano. And right, the story goes, like, there was a high school class that was going to tour this, you know, museum or whatever, and a girl, seeing the opportunity, you know, jumped the rope, whatever they had there, and she went, she started playing on Beethoven's piano. She's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, I'm playing Beethoven's piano. And then she was done. Nobody, there was a security guard there. He's like, okay, come on, get off. And the woman said, that was unbelievable. I'm sure people try to do that all the time. Does anyone ever, you know, how often do people come and try to, you know, play the Beethoven's piano? And the security guard said to her, you know, I think it was the security guard. I might get the details mixed up, but it is directionally correct. The security guard said to her, you know, Arturo Toscanini was here, the great composer, Arturo Toscanini. He came here, he looked at that piano, and we asked him, do you want to go play it? And he said, I couldn't dare touch that piano. There's like a certain reverence for the people that came before you, for that just understanding what you're viewing, respecting, you know, certain, you know, we've lost that, you know, people have lost that mystique, that concept. Everything's so accessible today, right? Everything is so accessible. We've been infused with this, whatever you want, you can have it type of attitude. And it really lessens that Ashrei Adam Efachei Tamid. We should live life with a reverence for the things around us, for the people around us, for the opportunities, for the moments, you know, to not devalue it as just another flippant, you know, to flippantly go through life and say, okay, do this now, I'll do that now, but to see it as like a real opportunity to revere the opportunity. Anyways, so that's how I'm going to interpret Ashrei Adam Efachei Tamid. However, Makshalibo, someone who's, you know, hardened heart, Yipol Bara, if you don't have that kind of reverence, you're just like, you do whatever you want type of thing, you're stubborn in that way, you're not going to properly take advantage of the moments, and you will Yipol Bara. All right, just want to do one more pasuk, so we could do five. Ari Noheim V'dov Shokek Moshel Rasha Al Amdal. That they say, like a roaring lion and a growling bear, so is a wicked ruler over a destitute people. So I, there are different ways you can understand this also, but I think what this means is basically, you know, if you have an Amdal, if you have a nation of poor people, think of like the Jews in Egypt type of thing, so then the ruler can do whatever he wants. Ari Noheim, you want to growl like a lion? I'm not talking about literally, but I'm talking about like you want to, you know, enslave them, make them feel bad. There's nothing that there's nothing the Amdal can do. They're almost at the mercy of the ruler. And in a similar sense, I don't know if these two psukim are supposed to be connected or not. But the next one talks about leaders also. We'll get to that next, I guess. But hold on. Yeah, Rashi says they're just the two same things. Trying to see if I had anything else here. Yeah, the Malbim in his classic style says there's a difference between the two. The Ari is Noheim when he has food. Whereas the bear that's growling is thirsty. Okay. They're different. I think the point is that Moshel Rasha al Amdal, it really puts the fear into the people. How do they say it here in the art scroll? Like a roaring lion, a growling bear, so is a wicked ruler over the destitute, just as a roaring lion, a growling. What?
Prowling bear, prowling.
I have growling with a G.
Oh, I was a bit of P.
Just as a roaring lion and a growling bear instill fear, so does a wicked ruler frighten his vulnerable victims. Again, if he has all the power and the people are destitute and are, you know, lacking for any kind of leverage over him, so then he can do whatever he wants and put them in fear at a moment's notice. We'll continue Mirtz Hashem next week talking about the deficient rulers and their wayward activities. Okay, Shkaya. Everyone should have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a good night.
Have a good night, guys. Thanks for joining. Thanks for logging on. Sarita, feel better.